Welcome to our Receiving is the New Giving community call. This is Jen Cohen talking, and we're thrilled that you're all here, those of you who are here right now and those of you who will be listening later. I'm here with all three of the Seven Stones gals are in one place at one time, and for those of you who know us better, that's a feat. So I'm here with Ms. Shay Adelson, whose voice some of you have already heard, and Shay is here to hold space with me and share stories throughout our conversation and also be all things maestro technological. So we use this conference line, for those of you who don't know, called Maestro Conference, and it allows us to do various things that Shay is the only one who knows how to make all that happen. So she'll say something about that in a minute. And Gina is here being all things social media, so she's very quiet. And she's tweeting out as we speak. And if you are one of those people that likes social media and wants to be tweeting out too, pray tell, you can do that at Seven Stones, following the conversation, hashtag enough. Is that right, Gina?
Yes, ma'am.
Yes, ma'am. Okay, you heard it from our guru herself. So there you go. For anyone who wants to have fun on the computer while we're engaged. And I'm here. My name's Jen Cohen. I'm the third leg of that stool, and I'm here to hold space and guide us in a dialogue and conversation together. So welcome. Thank you for taking the time, making the time. Shay, do you want to say a quick something about Maestro, and then I'll introduce the topic?
Sure. So the housekeeping for Maestro is that we have you all off of mute because we want this to be a conversational time together. And if you have background noise that you can't control, you can either mute yourself or let me know now and I can mute you. Someone has already requested that. And if you would like to speak while you're on mute, you can simply press the number 1 on your keypad, which will virtually raise your hand, and then we'll do something about that. We'll call on you. Otherwise, you won't be muted. And then the second thing is this technology allows us to operate as if we were all in the room together and actually have paired shares or break you out into breakout groups, which we will do one time today. So there's a little bit of a moment in time where you'll be paused while I do some magic back here to do that. Sometimes it goes really, really smoothly, and sometimes there's a little it can be a little funky, so just bear with me, and your patience is greatly appreciated. But it's a wonderful tool, and we hope you enjoy it. That's it.
Okay, great. Thank you. So as we enter the season of giving, Thanksgiving, the holidays, where giving is strongly emphasized, we thought we'd have a little fun and turn it on its head and ask ourselves some questions about receiving and do a little investigation into the practice of receiving as really a practice of being inside of the context of exquisite sufficiency. And I will say that Seven Stones, for those of you who don't know, is an organization that is dedicated, we have dedicated our hearts and our minds and our lives to the possibility that we could live in a context in which we know that we are already enough, already whole and complete and alive, and no improvement necessary. And we say that that's not really the water that we're swimming in the dominant culture, certainly not in the United States. And maybe not in the West at this point, but certainly not here in the United States, that we're in an endemic conversation about what there is not enough of, and we're on a holy grail quest for more of what there is not enough of, as if it will solve that problem, and we're not even solving the right problem. So our commitment is to live in a world sourced from the, dare we say it, the truth, the possibility anyway, that we are already enough and whole and complete. And so it is inside that context or that framework that we have this conversation and invite you into the conversation. And recently we were at a, and by we, sometimes I mean the collective we, like all three of us, sometimes I mean a subset of the we, but Gina and I in this case were at a workshop very recently in Manhattan, actually a day before the hurricane hit. And we were with at a workshop called Fundraising from the Heart, which was offered by Lynn Twist, who's a dear colleague and one of the people from whom we learned this distinction and possibility of sufficiency. And there was a gentleman at the workshop, and he stood up and he asked to tell this story. And the story he told was about his teacher and mentor and friend, Elizabeth Kubler-Ross. And some of you on this call may know who she is. She's really the person who brought into the popular lexicon the terminology about the stages of grief. She was a therapist and very, very highly sought after and well-known and well-loved by the people who got to study and mentor with her. And he was one of those lucky souls. And he got to be with her at the end of her life, literally within days of the end of her life. And he was sitting with her, and she said to him, you know, there are really two parts to life. And the first part is giving. And I'd give myself an A for giving. And the second part, she said, is receiving. And I'd give myself an F for receiving. So we dedicate this call to the possibility that we may all raise our grade before the end of our life and really look at receiving and what happens in a context of scarcity around giving and receiving, but in this case, receiving. So we want to take a moment to just give you a chance to say hello and get a couple of voices in the virtual room. We obviously can't hear from all of you actually as much as we would like to, but would a couple of brave or extroverted souls like to just say your name and what about this topic is interesting to you so we have some of your voices in the space with us? You can either raise your hand or you can just go for it, and we'll hope that it all works out, which it usually does in terms of nobody talking over anyone else.
Hey, can you hear me?
Yes.
Hey, my name is Christy, and called in. Very interesting topic, what the woman said about having an A in giving and an F in receiving. I know that I get extremely uncomfortable receiving, whether it's compliments or gifts or anything, and I love, love, love to give them. So I'm happy to be a part of this call and learn how to raise my grade in my short life.
Yeah, great. Thank you. Hi, welcome. Thanks for being here, dear.
Hi, this is Mary, and I just wanted to hello, can you hear me?
Yes, Mary, welcome. Yes, I hear you beautifully.
Yeah, hi. Hi, Jen. Hi, Gina. Hi, Shay. I just want to say thank you to you guys for putting this together because, the balance between giving and receiving is so important, and I get it wrong all the time. and also the other piece of it of, you know, getting frustrated when, you know, people who are really good at receiving and then just kind of being like, what's the discomfort around that when you know, it looks like there's lack of balance around the giving piece of how do we stay whole ourselves as we notice imbalance out there as well as imbalance in ourselves and, like, yeah, being with all of that.
That's great. Thank you so much. We'll do a little deconstruction of that imbalance later in the call, so... That's great. One more, maybe a male voice in the room. Not to put you guys on the spot.
Jen, Sarah Grace has her hand up. It could be by accident, but Sarah Grace, did you mean to raise your hand?
Yes, I did. But then right after... right after she I raised my hand, she said a male. So I was being
patient. Well, go for it, because they, you know, go for it, please.
All right, I'll try to be a man.
Yeah.
Well, the reason why I wanted to jump in at this point is because, in all honesty, I have learned to receive. And the reason I've learned to receive, because I never was particularly good at that, I would say F until, oh, probably close to 4 years ago when I got very, very ill. And I'm still ill, but at the beginning, and even now, I have allowed people to gift me and to support me. And I have really become a good receiver. It's not always easy, and it's been really hard to say yes or to ask for and then allow receiving. But I'll tell you, I just have to jump into my heart and, you know, ask, you know, the God of my understanding every day, you know, how can I give back, and where can I, you know, give to somebody else, and at the same time allow myself to really receive the beautiful gifts, excuse me, the beautiful gifts from my dear friends and family. And thank you, and I'll pass.
Great, thank you. Well, I think illness is actually one of the, often in this society anyway, one of the main teachers around receiving that we have. And vehicles for beginning to explore our relationship to receiving. And I wanted to share a story of my own that's related to illness as a way to grease your wheels, and then you will have the opportunity. We will put you into a pair for you to take a couple of moments to reflect on your own experiences of receiving and what happens to you as you notice the incoming. So my husband, this is not a story about my own illness, but my husband had cancer about 3 years ago, and he's fine now, so you can not have your attention go there, but thank God. But at the time, it was very unclear what was going to happen, and we had just come off a period of sabbatical, and he was unable to work really very much at all during the period of his cancer. And we made a decision to ask for help financially to manage what could have been a very long and protracted illness, et cetera, to manage in the short term some of our expenses. And it was, I noticed that I had a really complex set of experiences around asking and then the receiving. And one of them was this incredible sense of hope and need and desire that people would actually be there, that people would say yes, that people would reach out, and this longing to feel a sense of that kind of net underneath me and us. And then almost immediately a response of shame, like that's weird and ridiculous, because the height of success in this culture, at least in my little map, is to be able to be self-sufficient, to be able to do it on my own. So the longing to actually be contributed to that in that way seemed strange somehow. And then simultaneously in the receiving, a really similar set of responses, like real incredible gratitude and a sense that I was going to be okay no matter what happened to my husband, and this incredible desire for it to be over, to just have it stop, so I did not have to sit with the complexity of what I was feeling, and so I did not have to be with my own need. So that was some of what it was like, and it was this incredible practice. It was this incredible practice of staying upright and staying in relationship with myself and with people in the face of all of that, and what we would call in our Seven Stones world, the impact of scarcity on my capacity to know my place in the fabric of things and know that, of course, I belong and that there is a web to catch me and my own capacity to be held by the people who care about me. And all of those natural functions get interrupted in the context of scarcity. So now it's your turn. And this is where Shay will work her wizardry magic. So she's going to put you into a pair. You're going to say hello. You're going to say your name. You can say where you're from if you want to. And then you'll have 2 minutes each to really think of a time when it was your turn to receive and to take a little moment to reflect on your relationship to being able to receive at all. All right, welcome back. Anyone want to shout out, or would anybody shout out what you saw about receiving and your own pattern in relationship to it? What happened?
I think that I found that in receiving you have to let go. You have to open your whole body and your whole psyche and your spirit and let go in order to be empty enough to receive.
Great, thank you. Other people?
Receiving is something I've been working on. And part of it, I think, is liking myself enough that I gotta like be worthy, you know, that I've gotta learn to love myself more to be think that others would want to give and to receive.
Yeah, it makes a lot of sense in this culture where we have forgotten that we were born worthy, that we already are worthy already. There's no gaining it, earning it, that it already is. And we, in this culture of scarcity, have lost that tether, that thread, that knowing. And for many people, this conversation of worthiness to actually receive what is offered is huge. So thank you. Anyone else, what you noticed for yourself about your squirreliness or your relationship to receiving?
Yeah, Jen, this is Noji. The thing that I've noticed both in this call and in your story about your husband, a reminder for me, is that somehow I think in this culture we put receiving down as if not just that we're not worthy to receive, but that sort of the flip side of that, that by giving that we're better somehow, that we're better people or more capable or smarter or something, and that by receiving that we're less than.
Yeah.
And I think that that's really some of those feelings that you were expressing and that I've certainly experienced in practicing hard in the past year, that asking for help and that learning how to connect to the person and receive it is so powerful. It's so not humbling exactly, but in a good way humbling, you know, of recognizing that we're all at the same place.
Right. You know, it's so great what you said. Thank you, and thanks for being here. It's so great what you said because you really do have to pull apart that in the distortions that scarcity brings. There is this sense of the giver is charitable, is great,
right,
is kind-hearted, giving is noble. We've, you know, and that, and we are separate in a certain way from the receiving.
Exactly.
And the receiver is over there, and they're somehow other than the giver. That's the paradigm. That's the context of it. And I did have that experience of I could feel the thrust toward, oh my God, the fact that I'm in a position that I need this help, that this would make a big difference in my sense of sort of safety and flow and workability while I tend to my 4-year-old and my sick husband, is somehow wrong or bad. And if I were better equipped, if I planned better, if I were smarter, if I were more wizardly, if I were enough and up to it, I would figure it out on my own, and that would be success.
Mm-hmm.
And the having to reach into the world, which is actually what we're doing all the time anyway, somehow made me not okay, or evoked all that not okayness stuff that just lays latent when I'm all powerful and strong. I can just let it sort of sit there like sand at the bottom of the pond. But that need stirred that pot and brought it all up to the surface. And we get to really see the whole distortion that we live in. And there really is this big lie behind it, like that we aren't supposed to need, that we don't need, that when we're doing well, we don't need anything, or we don't actually receive all day long every day, which is really all that we're doing. We're receiving the food on our dinner table, we're receiving the air that we breathe, we're receiving the kindness of millions of strangers who've made whatever moment we're in, whether it's a shopping moment or a working moment, possible for us. And we act like we're not. Because it makes us feel better about ourselves in a culture where we're not supposed to receive anything. We're not supposed to need anything to receive it in the first place. So it's so deep and rich, everything you just said. I could go on and on, as you could tell. But
yeah, I'm trying really hard not to jump back in there and go on and on as well.
Oh, well, yeah. Go jump back in one more time, and then we'll see if somebody else wants to talk or we'll move on. But jump back in. Go.
Okay. I'm just so resonating with what you're saying and realizing that the receiving is the completion of the circle, that the connection, which is what we're all trying to feel anyway all the time, it's the receiving, well, it's both, but we don't seem to have a trouble giving here, but it's the both that completes the circle of completion, that allows us to connect to the spirit of each other, to the heart of each other, to the good stuff that's really what life is all about.
Yeah, I mean, really the irony is there is no giver without a receiver.
Precisely.
Right? What's
doesn't
the sound
exist.
Of one hand clapping or something, right?
Yeah, right.
Yeah. Yeah, so thank you. And it looked like there was a hand up.
Ona G's hand was up, and now Leslie's hand's up.
So, Ona G, do you want to say something, or did you take your hand down because
yeah.
you...
No, I'm still... Yeah, hi.
Okay, great. Hi, welcome.
Thank you. What I'm present to is that underneath all of the giving and receiving is the question of community.
Mm-hmm.
If one has a sense of community as being autonomous members that happen to be in the same place at the same time, and every now and then they interact, you know, for these very discrete moments, and they pretty much live in isolations, which autonomy and self-sufficiency kind of speaks to. But if community is an interaction and an interdependency, then giving and receiving is expected in fact. You know, it's like, you know, when you go to someone's house, you know, during the holidays, they expect you to sit and eat what you receive, and we do it graciously, but it's only at very specified times.
Yeah.
Then that's acceptable. And it really goes to the cultures from which we come from. In Africa, for example, it says, I am because we are, therefore I am. So it's just, it's a communal sense of reality. Now, of course, it's been distorted over the ages, but the introduction of capitalism has said everything has a price on it. You know, you're valued by how much you have, and if you don't have, that means you're less than. In fact, God didn't, the Protestants felt that if you were poor, it was God. So really, it's the rebuilding of history that's really at essence here.
Yeah, certainly we would concur with you over here for sure, and that we're sort of jumping ahead and back, but that's okay. Shay and I were in a conversation with a dear colleague and friend who I think might actually be on this call. Her name is Brenda, and she said so beautifully, giving and receiving is a practice of interdependence and community and sufficiency. And it is one of the ways to reweave if we get conscious and can tolerate and stand to be with the actual practice of giving from inside sufficiency. I'm not better than you. I'm not helping you. I'm not doing something for you separate from me. But I give, you receive. I receive in the moment that you receive. You give, I receive. That it is exactly, Noji, what you said, that our vision is this loop and that we are weaving the fabric of our interdependence through that practice, and that when it's unconscious, it's just a thing we do, and we have a real penchant for this word practice at Seven Stones, and when we make it conscious and ennoble it, so to speak, we call it a practice. We're consciously saying we're choosing this, and we're going to engage in it from our experience of being interwoven with one another, not from I need and therefore something's wrong and you are going to help me from this separate place. So thank you. And then Leslie, are you still
I am. Good morning. Can you hear me?
Good morning. Yes, I can hear you loud and clear.
Yeah, well, I'm in an inquiry. I'm a really good giver, and I think it's kind of somewhat unconscious in me as a way of proving value and being good enough. And then I love to receive, but I also, and I feel like I receive a lot in my life, but I also have some sadness around times where I don't receive. And what I'm looking at is kind of an inquiry into, if I'm a really good giver, and I've had a friend mention this to me, that I'm so good at it that you can almost maybe, she didn't say it like this, but almost people could feel lost around you. And there's times where I don't feel that I consciously give to get. I actually really love giving. It brings me joy. But then I think when I'm not giving, there's a part of me that yearns for things, and I'm really open to receiving, but I wonder if somehow I've affected the energetics, the space, the person, to where it's awkward or funky to then receive, and it's natural, and I'm always into creating organic things. Does that make sense?
Yeah. I mean, for me, what you're illuminating is the complexity of the terrain, which is, okay, so, and it brings a story that I wanted to tell to the surface, another story from our weekend, our very apparently eventful weekend in New York City with Lynn. We were out to dinner, Gina and I, with someone, out to a couple of meals, and we decided that we would gift the dinner to the people that we were having the dinner with, but because the people that we were with are junkies like we are in deconstructing everything and exploring and really interested in this distinction of sufficiency, we decided to take a look at what had just happened at the dinner table. Because at first pass, it really looked like from sufficiency and an act of generosity and love, like we just wanted to gift. We just wanted to give it. We wanted, you know, to sort of shower our love on these people and share ourselves. And it's not like that's not true, but human beings are complex. And when we're sort of have a foot in different paradigms, if you will, things get complicated. So we drilled down. And there really was a part, I'll speak for myself, there really was this part of me that definitely had a like, had this voice that was like, okay, but maybe now she'll really love me. Maybe now she'll really stick around. Maybe now she'll see and I won't be alone. You know, it was like this small, quiet voice about buying the belonging and the community and the connection through this offering. Now, and is it one or the other, and does it make the giving rotten and bad? No, no, no. I mean, we're complicated and life is full of different rivers and streams. But it was just as we drilled down, we saw that it wasn't quite so pure in a sense. And there were lots of forces at work. And then the people who were receiving the meal had their own things to say about the experience of receiving it and wondering where the generosity was coming from and if it was too much and too little, and that we are so, the waters are so muddied that the clearness of our giving and receiving like isn't totally trustworthy even to ourselves at times. So that wasn't specific to what you said, but that's what it evoked for me. It's just, it's complicated terrain in the world that we've made, in this very modern world that Anojay, you articulated around the introduction of sort of commodity and money and the way we've played with those forces and the way they've now structured our world has made this whole flow back and forth really complex. So I want to just in the, so is there anything anyone else wants to say? I don't like standing in front of the computer, so I have to go back and see if you all are raising your hands. It doesn't look like it. Is there anything anyone wants to say at this juncture? Okay, great. So let's take a quiet moment. We like those around here. Let's just take a quiet moment. We aren't going to put you back into a pair, but you can just take a moment to breathe and just reflect for a moment on a recent or far back, it could be one or the other, example of not a time that you were on the receiving end, but a time when you were on the giving end. And what I want you to get present to is an attempt to give and someone clearly had difficulty receiving what you had to offer. And it could have been your time, it could have been your love, it could have been money, it could have been an object. Doesn't matter what you were offering. And then notice what it's like to not be received or to have somebody visibly struggle with the receiving of your offering. Just let yourself take a breath or two. If you have pen to paper, jot a note. Just let an image or a sensation wash over you. It might be a felt sense of body, memory. It might be an image. So anyone who wants to speak to a little vignette, a little memory of you're actually offering now, and there's some kind of wall, some kind of pushback. What that was like or what you noticed as you just reflect quietly for a minute on it. Anyone want to say, one or two people?
This is Lori. I've had this happen and I felt rejected.
Yeah.
When someone isn't able to take my gift of time or whatever.
Great. Thank you. Anyone else?
Anna Jay, was that you trying to speak?
Oh, no, I'm sorry. There's a lot of noise in the background. I'm sorry.
Okay. No, it's okay. I heard a voice, and I was muting you, so.
Anyone else?
Jen, this is Shay. I'm thinking of my marriage, and I'm thinking of offering gestures of not so much affection, but really gestures of love. Like, and what immediately came up for me was how it's so painful in the dismissal or in the non-receiving of it, however it looks. Like physically painful, and yet what I know about him is how much he yearns for the very thing I'm offering, and so it made me. So the dialectic of that, I was thinking, gosh, that is so often the case for myself, where I feel so in the yearning of something, and yet when it comes, I'm often unprepared to receive it. And so I've developed over the years some compassion for him. And I don't experience it as rejection anymore, but it still occurs as like an ouchie, like a physical sensation of pain inside of the deflection, and also inside of not being allowed to contribute to the very thing I know is a yearning.
Yeah.
Can I add to that? This is Cheryl.
Yeah, please.
And then I think the other thing that happens is it gets really murky very quickly, because an act of generosity or altruism or love or whatever it is quickly devolves, and judgment starts to step in if the person, depending on how the person rejects or kind of deflects the offer, then we have to then go back into, well, at least for me, spaces of judgment and self-recrimination. It quickly can go into an uncomfortable emotional space that started out from a position of love, or position of kindness, or whatever it was your motivation in the first place, and then you find yourself in this kind of, tar at the end of it, and then sort of colors how you approach an act of generosity again.
That's so great, Cheryl. I'm going to say one other thing, if that's okay. Jen, so
yeah.
A little less complicated than marriage is, I have a very dear friend who's, absolutely gorgeous, like stunningly gorgeous, and it's really fun to, look at her and enjoy her presence, because she's not just beautiful on the outside, she's like gorgeous on every way, and to compliment her is like, I feel like you have to like put on armor, you have to get ready for the deflection, and it's like, and I notice that, and I don't want to feel hurt by the deflection, so I can do what Cheryl's saying. I can almost get mad. Like, how can you not know you're beautiful? Like, how can you not receive that? It would be so fun if you would receive that, because then we can both celebrate your beauty, which would be so great and fun for everyone. And it feels like this missed opportunity, and I can notice the anger. And then the armoring on my part, and the like missed opportunity. But I do. It's kind of new information for me as I'm reflecting that I do this armoring And yet I still want to do it, which maybe is part of my own pattern of rebellion. Like, I'm going to do it anyway, even though I can anticipate the deflection.
This is great. So I just want to punctuate. Thank you, beautiful women, for sharing what you just shared. I just want to punctuate that you guys are both articulating sort of our patterns of our own relationship and other people's relationship to receiving. So I wrote a few down, like we just avoid being in a situation at all where we might receive something, whether it's love or compliments or stuff or whatever it is. We actually put on our armor and give back what's being offered. We actually turn it down. Energetically or literally, no, thank you, right? Say you've got this great strawberry story. A friend comes over, she brings you a box of strawberries, and your first, and it's mine too, may I pay you for the strawberries? No, the friend says. Please, it's an act of family, of generosity, of being interdependent, of being in community with you. And then you have a choice at that moment. You can either press it, no. And people, I mean, my family used to do this. People would war over the check at the dinner. And it was like some weird battle of honor or something. Mm-hmm. Finally, who was going to surrender and who was going to pay the check? But you had to do this dance of, no, I won't receive.
Yeah.
Because if I receive, then that's bad. And, it's like sort of bizarre one-upmanship or something. And then at the end, I guess if you'd fought in battle long enough, I don't know exactly what the culture was. I would watch it as a child, like these men battle over who was going to pay for dinner.
Mm-hmm.
And my grandfather always won, so that was also interesting. Like people would do this battle, and the same person won every time, which seemed like, could we just cut to the chase? But anyway, we have all these rituals of giving it back, giving back what it is we're receiving, or immediately receiving it and then letting the person know what we're going to do for them.
Yeah.
We like to call that at Seven Stones quid pro quo, which is, we're not the only people who call it that, right? So you give me something, you give me the strawberries, I'm so grateful, and I think immediately I'm going to go knit you a pair of gloves or something, right? To give it back to you.
Jen, that's so great, because I literally ran out to my car because I had bought this person something, because it wasn't the first act of generosity she's done. And I have this quid pro quo, like I need something on hand. And I didn't have it in my car, and I felt like a little puppy. Like I could feel this like little girlness that could not tolerate the sensation of being loved like that. And when I think about what happens when we allow the exchange and the gifting and the receiving, something bigger happens than the giving and the receiving. It actually is exponential. It's greater than the sum of its parts. And that filling up of warmth and love and good feeling, for me, can be overwhelming. It's like an overwhelming sensation.
Yeah, but it's really important what you just said, which is the act of saying thank you. I accept. I'm right here. I'm going to take it all in. Actually, grows something bigger between you. It grows something in the social fabric, in the interdependence. And when we either avoid receiving it, or even just contract around it, resist, or give it back. Those are the sort of the three moves that I articulated for myself anyway before this call. We stop that process. We stop that from seeding itself and growing and watering in our own heart and in our community and in the space between us.
Mm.
So thank you.
Ona Jay has his hand up.
Okay, great. So Ona Jay, and then we're going to, I'm going to say a couple of final things, distinguishing sufficiency-based giving and receiving. Go, Ona Jay. Go ahead.
Yeah, thank you. What came up for me is that there was a question of anticipation, because once we go through a dynamic and we give and we get rejected, and then after that comes anticipation, well, this person isn't going to receive it.
He just bounced off.
Oh.
Bummer.
Oh. I hate that. I feel like, what is it, Tom Ashbrook on the show, that happens to him every once in a while on point, and then he has to do something very sophisticated
quickly.
To deal with very quickly. Right, exactly.
Maybe he'll come
back. I hope he comes back. Okay, good. I want to distinguish in the last bunch of minutes that we have together what we call sort of scarcity-based giving and receiving and sufficiency-based giving and receiving. And when we and these are sort of like signposts to how we know we're in one paradigm or another, when we sort of look to our motivations to ask ourselves, our motivations can tell us what world we're in a certain sense. So if we're giving if we're giving to save someone or to be super altruistic or good, we might be coming from scarcity. When we notice there's some story about somebody who's less than or a victim that we're helping, then we might be in scarcity. So there's this great and beautiful quote that I think was spoken by someone from the Arshuar tribe in Ecuador. And they basically said, if you're here to help us, go home. But if you're here because you know that your liberation is bound up with ours, then let's get to work. And so when we're noticing we feel one down in the receiving, when we notice that we think the giving will somehow make us better or...
make a right on Vernon.
Make a right on
make
Vernon.
A right
then
turn
make
on
a right
Vernon.
On Vernon. Can you mute him, honey?
I did.
He's in a cab or something. Then we might be in scarcity. And if we're standing in knowing that our liberation is bound up with yours, knowing that my giving is also my receiving, and that practice will expand the pie, will expand both of our sense of belonging and connection and threadedness to the planet, we might be standing in sufficiency in our giving and receiving. And when we're asking the question, is this enough or is it okay or can I take it, we might be in scarcity. And if we're standing in it's already true that I'm worthy. It's already true that it's okay. It's already true. One of our philosopher mentors calls it a priori knowing. So it's already, you get to presume it. You actually get to be that arrogant as to presume that you're already worthy of the strawberries or the love or the thousands of dollars, literally thousands of dollars that people gave us when John was sick. Then you might be standing in the practice of sufficiency in your giving and receiving. Thoughts, comments, reflections. Anojay, are you back? Are you with us? Do you want to say your profound, cool thing? Oh, Sarah Grace wants to talk.
Hi. Quickly, I just wanted to. Okay. What I want to say is, I was given a beautiful, beautiful gift last year for Christmas. A really good friend of mine, who's quite wealthy. What she gave for Christmas gifts was quite a chunk of money to each of her friends, and she said, gift this forward. So the money that she gave was to actually invite us to give somebody or some people in our lives a gift who, you know, we felt, you know, would be very much gifted by it. So I just thought that was a beautiful way of giving. And I'm telling you, I have never been so excited about a gift. You know, I had $300 to give away to friends and family, and I just had so much fun. I was so excited. So, you know, it's great to get those gifts from others that you can actually pay it forward.
Right. And I think that one of the, and you know, I adore what you just said, and I wanna just invite people to notice, like, we're really comfortable, more comfortable anyway, than taking the gift and paying it forward. And you are also one of the people who's worthy of having it paid forward too. So it can. You know, there was one time in our sufficiency call group that Gina and I were part of, Gina for, I think, 10 years and me for 7 years, where we just did this experiment of gifting each other. And one of the things in the receiving that people really were asked to sit with is, what are you going to do with the money? And the urge to give the money to, quote, something good once we had received it was incredibly strong. And we actually played with, what if we spent that money on us? Like, what if we were the worthy recipient of the good? And what would actually happen? And people had varying degrees of success with that. Somebody bought a television. Somebody got a tattoo. There were very interesting experiments that we conducted around this, and there is this sense of urge to keep it going. And that's not bad. It's beautiful. It's actually totally beautiful, and it's all part of it. And for the people who are asking about how do I actually become porous enough to also be one of the lucky recipients, that's a place for us to pause and ask. Maybe I'll keep 25 of it for me, or 50 or 100, and give away the rest, because I'm one of those worthy ones too.
This is Mary. Oh,
hi Mary. Go ahead. Oh. Go.
Hi. Well, yeah. No, I'm just loving this. I just wanted to add a comment that I think, you know, around this notion that we need to feel our own sufficiency and completeness and worthiness in order to receive is just so true in every arena. And it's so interesting, because I think when we're yearning for something, whatever it is we're yearning for, there is underneath that yearning some sort of sense of insufficiency, or we sense that we're lacking whatever it is we're yearning for. And so there's a sense underneath that of something about us is lacking, and that therefore that's why we're lacking whatever it is we're yearning for.
Mm-hmm.
So it really does invite us to really go to that place of really feeling that deep sense of okayness in ourselves first, and to you know, it's interesting, because I think I saw this in my own life long ago when I was single, and I was wanting the man of my dreams to walk into my life, and it wasn't happening for a long time. And so there was a sense of yearning there. And it was when I shifted my focus to doing something that made me feel totally complete in my work life that I was not focusing on it, because I had a sense of that I'm totally fine. And that's, of course, when he walked into my life, right?
Of course,
right?
Of course, yeah.
Yeah. So, you know, it happens, I think, in all sorts of arenas that it is really this sense of you have to assume you're totally fine. But to get to that place of assumption, you can't lie to yourself. You have to really be there because your focus is on something where, of course, it's assumed. And in this case, it happened to be a refocusing on something that was a professional focus that made me really happy and made me feel really complete, and I wasn't feeling needy.
Yeah. Yeah, well, it's beautiful. I mean, you said so many amazing things, but one of them really, I got this visceral image of the yearning itself, the longing itself presupposes it's not there.
Yeah.
Right? So, and it keeps the not having in place.
Yeah.
It actually keeps it in place because the very activity of wanting presumes it's not here. And what you did is like let go and just be in life and not have your attention on the wanting. And in that, you know, then there was space for it to actually show up.
Right.
And in some ways it's the same process with sufficiency, which is we are, you know, here's like, it's like the grand lie and the grand illusion. We are actually all already receiving all day long every day. I said this earlier, but it's worth repeating. We're receiving the food. We're receiving life itself, all of the bodily functions that kept us upright through this entire call all day long. Everything is actually being given, and we are taking it all day long, every single day. And if we got present to that, if we actually let go of thinking we didn't know how to receive, or we weren't receiving, or we can't receive, or it's bad to receive, we'd actually get that we're constantly receiving life. And it's offered freely, absolutely freely. And that people, we're actually offering each other freely all the time. And we're doing a better or worse job at taking it with a little more, you know, and certain things trigger us more and all that kind of stuff. But we are already practicing. And when we bring that to consciousness and bring our own sense of sufficiency to it, we enliven it and embolden it with a lot of power to transform our communities into communities instead of them being what Anoji articulated as sort of pockets or groups of people who sometimes get together and do things for each other, but live in a fundamental conversation of separation or aloneness or autonomy, the grand prize of our culture, autonomy and self-sufficiency. So thank you. It's beautiful. And it's a great segue. We're getting close to the end of our time together, and so thankful that you're here to, and as curious as we are, and interested in the dialogue, and want to share with you a couple of things that are happening in the Seven Stones world. To continue to play and engage. And one of them is our annual final call of the year that is on December 13th at 12 noon Eastern Time. And it's another call just like this. And really the focus is on how we really complete our year and let go of what needs to be let go of and get ourselves, somebody said this before, into that empty space of creation so we can receive the next year and create and receive into 2013. So that's December 13th at noon with Miss Gina facilitating us all in that. And then the second thing, which we're really, and if you're interested and you want to pre-register for the call, so to speak, you can just press 1 on your keypad now and Shay will wizardly make sure that you are registered for that call. And the second thing, which is a much deeper dive into this conversation about our already enoughness, is a 7 or 12-month learning journey that begins at the end of January, where we really unwind the scarcity paradigm inside ourselves and embody and inhabit the practice of sufficiency. And for those who are interested in this work as part of your work in the world, the course goes for 12 months and ends in a certification. So if you are a person that's really wants your work to contribute to the human community and are eager to be in a community of this sort where people are exchanging ideas and thinking deeply together and trying to understand and are looking for some fresh interpretations of abundance and power and economics and really are sick of the culture of scarcity in which we live and want to uproot it as much as we do, then this course is hopefully, is our intention, is a fabulous learning journey for all of us. And we've been living this set of practices for 7 years, and it's existed up until now as an online learning course through a website called The Daily Om, and now we're expanding upon it and gathering a group of of people to go on the journey together in community facilitated by all three of us, actually. So if you have any interest in further information about that, you can press 2 on your keypad, and then we'll make sure to be in conversation with you. And then we just, as always, want to say thank you so much for your whatever you're doing in the world. Some of you we know well, and some of you we don't, but we know you're up to creating amazingness and part of this larger movement afoot on the planet that we have a world where nobody and nothing is left out and where all of us are counted. And we thank you for your good work and are incredibly grateful to receive you in and receive what you offer back to us by through your participation and your comments and your love and your interest in our courses and just in us and in the conversation for sufficiency. And we do have an absolutely gorgeous card deck that Gina created. It's all of her artwork, which is quite astounding. So you have to receive this, Gina. This is your little receiving moment. Quite astoundingly beautiful work. And it's like a tarot card deck, a sufficiency tarot card deck, and it's almost done and a beautiful gift for you or anyone in your community this holiday season. So it's something we are going to be extending into the world in the next week or so. So I think I said everything. Does anyone else besides me, God help me, want to have the final word and say anything at all?
No, that was sufficient, honey.
Okay, great. Well, blessings, everybody. Thank you for your participation, and have a fantastic day. And notice, go out and notice everything you're already receiving.